Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 923. This episode brought to you by Squarespace. Say, you got some big plans for the new year? Well, Squarespace makes it easy to turn your idea into a unique website. Show off your work or your blog or your soul. You publish some content, sell products, services of any kind, just in a few clicks. You can customize everything from look and feel to settings and products using beautiful templates created by world-class designers. And there's nothing ever to install, patch, or upgrade. So head to squarespace.com, get a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use the offer code Nerdist to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Let's go to the Nerdist Community Corkboard. Dave Clock, an amazing artist who lives in Los Angeles. If you ever went to any of the Meltdown shows when it was the Meltdown with Jonah and Kumail, you've seen his work. He did all the posters for those shows, and they are all masterpieces. Anyway, he's having an art show featuring his posters and other original artwork Saturday, December 16th. So if you like cool art, definitely go. It's going to be at the A.G. Geiger Bookstore in Chinatown. That is 502 Chungking Court, Los Angeles 90012, from 5 to 9 p.m. Or if you can't make it and you still want to see, go buy Dave's art or go look at Dave's art at DaveClock.com. Pearl the Poi Puppy is an adorable blind and deaf dog who's living in Hawaii with her own Instagram account. And to celebrate this holiday season, she's using her Instagram to help raise money for some great animal charities. So she can raise as much money as possible, she created a contest. If you donate money to one of the charities, you can be entered to win really great prizes, including dog toys, food, and more. Check out at pearl.the.poi.puppy on Instagram to find out more info, where to donate, how to win, all those things. And just give her a little digital hug if you can. Just give her a sweet little digital hug. This episode is Bill Skarsgård, who is, you may know, is one of the infinite number of Skarsgård clan. You got Alexander Skarsgård, Stellan Skarsgård, Bill Skarsgård. Bill is a brilliant actor who, of course, played Pennywise in It. He was incredible. And he's just such a nice guy. I was in New York. I think we recorded this maybe like 6 weeks ago. He just happened to be in New York doing some press. And I went to his hotel, went up to his hotel room. Just he and I hung out in his hotel room and recorded this. He was just so freaking cool. And he's promoting, besides It, of course, which I'm sure you've already seen, Castle Rock, which I am very excited about. It is coming to Hulu next year. Castle Rock is essentially the horror series which was created for Hulu, and it's basically based on the stories of Stephen King, and it intertwines characters and themes from the fictional town of Castle Rock. Bill is in it, Sissy Spacek, Melanie Lynskey, who's a brilliant actor, Scott Glenn, Terry O'Quinn. It is a fantastic group of people. So I am very, very excited for Castle Rock next year. Of course, executive produced by J.J. Abrams and based on Stephen King work. So there you go. That's that. This episode also brought to you by Stamps.com. The holidays are bearing down upon us quickly and showing no sign of slowing down. Time is an ever-moving train that we can only hope to hang on to and enjoy the ride. But maybe it's easier to do that if you buy and print all of your postage from your own computer. Don't wait in lines at the post office. You probably have a million errands to run, right? So who has time for that? Print it all out from any letter, package, any class of mail, from your computer, from your printer. The mail carrier picks it up. Stamps.com makes it easy. They're going to send you a digital scale, automatically calculates the exact postage you need. They're going to even help you decide the best class of mail every time. Print postage any day, any time of day. Stamps.com is always open. Stamps is one of those things that what I love about Stamps is that it prints out the exact postage you need, which I always feel like is a subtle way of saying hey, I'm professional. Psst, hey, I'm professional. Rather than putting two or four or five different stamps lining up the side of the thing, and then you're licking them and you get that taste in your mouth. Right now, you can enjoy Stamps.com with a special offer that includes a four-week trial plus postage in a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist. That's Stamps.com under the promo code Nerdist. Now here's the Nerdist Podcast, numbers 923, with Bill Skarsgård. Katie, Bill the Skarsgård.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
the great part about that is that you can just talk in Swedish and know what
they're saying. Oh, yeah, no, exactly.
And so, you know, being in another country, you have a secret code.
Oh, yeah, and you forget sometimes.
Of your native language.
Right.
Have you ever been surprised by anyone where you think, like, oh, we're totally cool to talk here, and then someone responds in Swedish?
I think I've been close up times, you know, where you'd, like, where I'm like, I'm about to say something, and I'm like, almost like a sixth sense, you know, it's like, maybe I shouldn't say this out loud, and then it's like, he's fucking Swedish, I knew it.
Yeah, it was
And in this city, it's crazy, because, like, every time I walk around the streets, I hear Swedish.
Really?
Every time. Like, if I take a walk for an hour, I guarantee you I'll hear Swedish.
It's one of the most, it's one of the incredible things about New York is that it's so close to, you know, the European experience that everything is, you know, 6 to 8 hours away.
Yeah.
But when you're in Los Angeles, that's all, you know, 11 to 15 hours away.
Yeah.
So we just don't.
Right.
We just don't get it as much, but it's so wonderful here.
Yeah, it really is. And, I mean, I think New York is, I think it's the fourth biggest city in Sweden.
Oh, really?
I think, or maybe that's London, maybe it's the fifth.
Oh,
I think,
wow.
But, like, in terms of where Swedish inhabitants, it's, I think London is the fourth and New York's the fifth.
And I was asking your girlfriend, because my wife and I would love to go to Sweden. And she said, yeah, you know, go to Stockholm, start there, and I'll give you a list of places you need to go see.
Yeah, no, and if you come, like, both Alita's parents and my parents have, like, beautiful houses in the countryside. It's just, like, an hour outside of Stockholm.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and you, like, come out and you'll have dinner. And
stuff. Oh, that would be so amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've never been, and you know, we watch so many horror movies, and Swedish horror is a very specific style of horror movie.
Yeah.
And it's so, looks like the angles are wide, and it's so picturesque, and it's just stunning. You know, so much of it feels like it's outdoors, kind of dealing with the elements.
Yeah.
Do you have is there sort of a defining quality of Swedish film for you when you think about the difference?
I don't know if, I got this question the other day about, because It is set in the summer, and it was like, oh, what do you think about? It's like, that's so scary about the summer. And I think, like, December is supposedly the most haunted month or the most spiritual month for some reason.
Okay.
Or sort of in the mystical, you know,
sure.
Sort of gothic lore, at least. It's like December has always been. And if you've never been to Sweden in December before, it's quite a thing. Like, it gets pitch black at 3 p.m.
Oh, yeah.
Pitch black. And so, like, I would, as a kid, I would go to school, you know, I would go to school and it's dark outside. And then when I was walking back from school, it was dark outside. And it's black. It's like not like it's proper black darkness at 3 p.m. So I think in terms of Scandinavian horror, or sort of creative, you know, writing and music as well. I think there's something about being surrounded in that darkness that sort of stimulates, I guess, creativeness, or that you imagination, and like there's a lot to come from that. Like the place of that it's such a dark place during the winter, and of course in the summer it's the complete opposite. And it's rough because when you go into it in December. And then you know that it's like it's 2-3 months, you know, of this.
I mean, it's interesting. It'd be so fascinating to find out if your biochemistry is different, because I think most humans are not designed to be in darkness for 23 hours.
Yeah.
A day.
No, it's crazy. And I mean, Stockholm is fairly south. So, you know, if you go up to, I think it's like sort of on the third to the most southern point, if you look at it that way, and then there's 2/3 more of the country, maybe even more, maybe it's like 3/4. And if you go up like the furthest north of Sweden, you get full darkness, like there's no sun at all weeks, and then in the summer it's just sun.
that balances out, because you know you think you hear about this, you know, this dark culture where it just seems like they've just thrown a tarp over the sky for a handful. And you think, oh, the people that must exist there must be like mole people. They stay inside. They're tiny. But Swedish people are tall, blue eyes, fair skin, stunning. Yeah. You know, it's like everyone. It just that part doesn't add up.
Right.
That part doesn't add up. I almost think that maybe Sweden is a mythical land. And right. Then you're all magical beings. You must all be magical beings of some sort. I mean, your entire family. Does everyone in your family act, or are there a couple that have?
No, jobs? So I have three older brothers.
Yes,
and Alexander and Gustav are both actors.
Yes,
then my youngest older brother Sam is a doctor, uh-huh. medical doctor, and then it's me, and then it's my little sister,
mm-hmm.
Who's. She's sort of nightclub, like managing a nightclub in Stockholm and sort of, or restaurant slash bar sort of thing. Then there's my little brother, Walter, mm-hmm. who's an actor. He's 5 years younger than me. And then I have two, like my youngest brothers who are too young to be, to be anything at this point. They're 8 or 9 and 6.
Got it.
Or 9 and 5. Well, how old are they? 8 and 5. Yeah. Yeah, like it remains to be seen if they want to do it. It's one of those. It's a weird thing because my dad hasn't been sort of actively encouraging us to pursue acting. I mean, definitely not actively encouraging us, but he sort of encouraged, or my mom and my dad encouraged us to do whatever we wanted. So if I said like I want to be an actor, my dad was like, well, sure, you know, that's fine, but you know, you need to work hard at it, and you need to take it seriously, and you know, all these sort of advices
sure.
That he would give me if I'd say anything, you know, if I said that I wanted to be a whatever, he would encourage me to take it seriously and work hard at it. And it's funny because I think he gets, he gets the question a lot, and he never thought that any of his kids would be actors. Like when he first became a dad, you know,
sure.
It's like, I don't see any of my kids becoming actors. And you know how he has 4 out of his 8 kids.
And everyone's doing really well too.
It's crazy.
It's hard enough for one person from one family to succeed, but there's some sort of weird entertainment royalty that courses through your blood.
I don't know what it's really hard to, I think, come to terms or to just justify. Like, I don't know why, you know, there's so many people out there that work so hard and you know, really try to pursue a career in acting, and nothing happens, and then I don't know why we're doing so well. It's embarrassing, I think.
Well, you know, with it what's fantastic, I mean, what's really fascinating about it is that you know you were cast really based on your performance level. I mean, there's no, you know, it's not one of those movies like, oh, we cast a tall, handsome Swedish man. It's like,
yeah,
I mean, that character just has to be creepy as fuck.
Yeah.
And you don't even see his face, you know, don't even see your actual face. And so that's a really great role to get, because you sort of have to feel like, hey, I really just got this because my performance was
yeah.
good.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a great role like that, because even in the casting process, there was no sort of specified thing that they were looking for. I mean, Andy, the director, they were looking at, you know, women read for it, like girls read for it, older guys read for it, like fat, thin, whatever. Like, there's no like rule to what Pennywise would be. You know,
right.
There's no like type. There was no type. There was no he or she could be anything. It's just, you know, whatever the sort of Andy's interpretation initially would be, and then I just did something that I guess sort of was in line with whatever Andy had envisioned before even started casting it. So, which is one of those things where it's just sort of combination of just sheer luck that he was doing it, and I sort of brought something that he had already thought of as the character.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And because of that, that sort of really was the beginning of such a great collaboration between us, because whatever I brought, he responded to, and then sort of he said, you know, we really thought along the sort of the same lines of what the character would be.
Right.
So the character you see in the movie is sort of our, you know, sort of collaborative version of what Pennywise was. And,
sure.
And there was really never any sort of conflicts or disputes. We were sort of on the same page throughout the whole thing, which is extremely rare, I think, as for an actor. I mean, I've never... it's one of the, you know... sort of greatest collaborations I've ever had with the director before.
I mean, it's the other great thing too is that I think you can never be typecast as Pennywise because you just you don't look like you,
right?
So no one will ever go, oh, it's hard for me to see that guy as anything else because he's just so much like, because unless you put clown makeup on, like yeah. maybe you can't play other clowns,
right?
But outside of yeah. that, you know, it seems like it really is an incredibly freeing type of a role because you don't it's. You just disappear into it in a way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is great because I don't, you know, I mean, if we look at, I mean, this is obviously without a doubt the biggest thing I've ever done in terms of how the success of it and how you know how big the movie became and. Also, the thing that people will, you know, most people probably don't know who I am, or they haven't seen any of my other works, and yeah. then they go see this movie. And you're right, like, I think there is a, you know, a problem with becoming a type as an actor, you know, and you establish yourself as one thing, and then the industry starts putting you into that type and casting you as the same sort of character over and over again.
Right.
I think you limit yourself and you limit the type of characters that you get to play. So having this role as sort of my launching thing is pretty great because it's hard to typecast me as a creepy clown over and over again, you know? I really think it's such a fortunate thing because it is a full transformation in a sense. The character, you know, the voice and the movement and the makeup and everything is so far away from who I am in everyday life, right? and I just kind of want to see where that takes me in terms of like I always wanted whenever I've gotten the question of like where do you envision yourself in 5 or 10 years or blah 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 and all these sort of ridiculous questions I try not to think that far ahead at all, but I have always had, even when I was, you know, a kid or younger and started out acting, I always wanted to, like, my main goal was to be able to play as many different characters as I can.
Yeah.
And constantly challenge myself. So my goal was to be able to get work, right? Like, to just be able to get work and do things that inspired me. And to play different characters, you know, I think that is what's sort of one of those things that is most exhilarating for me as an actor is to just really delve into a character do that, and then you move on to the next thing, and it's completely different, and there's completely new challenges ahead of you, and to constantly test yourself like that is wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of people start out, they think, oh, I just want to be super successful, and they don't really think about what is it that specifically that I want to do, because I think that I think there is a trap of people who just want to be famous actors or just want to be I just want to be like a lead, like a male or female lead, and then you go, well, but then that's really limiting because you could just do that one thing, and at a certain point you kind of can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. But if you go into, but what you're saying is sort of really about the craft and the sort of the magic of just disappearing into characters. I mean, you there are millions of things that you could do for years, and as you start to get older, it's like, oh, when you're 60, you can play these types mm-hmm. of characters. And then you're not, you know, some aging film star is like, oh, I got to put on my Spanx and go get the stunt guy to jump around again. Right. That doesn't sound fun.
No, and I mean, I love, and I think that it's the... it's a sad thing when you look at our industry and you see so many, you know, men and women who sort of try to cling on to youth, right? And they surgically try to make things look younger and Botox and all these things as an actor. And it, to me, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Like, why? I mean, aging is a wonderful thing to do or to experience as an actor, because I'm really looking forward, you know, to the time when I'm 60 years old and, like, I'll be able to play the lives of 60-year-old men.
Right.
You know? And I can't do that now, but I'm looking forward to the time when my face and my body is mature enough to take on those type of characters. And,
right.
And even the same thing of, you know, being 35 or, you know, 40, every 5 years, there will be an opening, you know, some doors will be shut
right.
And others will open, right? In terms of characters and who you play. I think that there's, I think an actor should look at aging as, and I mean, I think people should look at aging like that in life as well, right? That it's like this obsession with clinging on to youth
sure.
is not healthy. Like aging is a wonderful, beautiful process, and aging like an older like an aging face, like an older woman, an older man's face can be so beautiful to look at. I think you know that you see the aging process
right.
happening. It's I don't understand this, you know, thing of trying to cling on to
you. Well, right now you're like 27.
Yeah.
So you're like a youth billionaire. You're rich in youth right now. And you know, when I was your age, I used to think that too. And then
you got older.
Well, right before I started to hit 40, I was like, oh fuck. I don't, this idea of like cutting up your face, I don't know, like, but I wouldn't, I just sort of feel like, I guess whatever it is going to be whatever it is.
Yeah.
But you do feel, you do sort of feel that, and it's deeper than the superficial thing of going, oh, I just look a little different. It's that it's so tied to not to freak you out about getting older, but it is so tied to like really understanding, oh, I'm mortal and there's an end point to all this shit. But when but you're basically
dying
right now. You're a time millionaire, so you're like, oh, God. But I do believe the way you present it that way. I believe that you are excited about it, and that when you do, and I hope that when you're 60, you're like, this is better than I thought it was gonna be. I mean, I've heard that people in their 60s, from late 50s up, can be the happiest times in people's lives,
right?
Because they just don't. All the stresses that we have when we're younger and all of the anxieties and all of the... It just all, you know, for a lot of people, it just goes away. Like, oh, yeah, you know, it's a gift. We're here. It's great. Everything's great. I feel happy and I know who I am now. It just takes that long to figure out who you are.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure. I understand, like, coming from, like, you know, a 27-year-old, but like, why are you worrying about aging? Yeah, it's... But it's what it is to me, because 27 is a weird age, I think, because it's like one of those things where, like, for the first time, there's a shift when you go into sort of your late 20s,
sure.
I think, where it's like, you're, like, I did this movie earlier this year called Assassination Nation. It's a high school movie. And I played high school, and I knew that when I was doing that, I'm like, I play 18, and it's, you know, it's sort of a teen movie. I mean, it's much more than that actually, but it's, you know, we're high school kids, and I knew when I was doing this, I'm like, this is the last time. like, I'm like, this is, you know, this is the last time that I could ever play someone. And going again, you know, talking about opening doors and doors shutting, like, I'm maturing in age, but like that, like, I knew I had the fitting, my first fitting for that. And, you know, I'm 18 and it's a small American town. So, like, my character is, not only is it, like, sort of, in a different country that I went to high school in Sweden, in a very pretentious high school where everybody sort of had smoked pipes and like had suspenders, right? So I'm like, small town American high school is exotic to me, and
yes.
I don't know how they dress, and I don't know what an 18-year-old dress is like. So I have this fitting, and it's like, some skater things and some skater baggage thing. And there's this meme, like this photo of Steve Buscemi who says like, "Hey, what's up, kids? Have you seen this?
No.
Can I show you?
Yeah, please.
Because this is Like, I've heard a lot that, like, oh, my resemblance to Steve Buscemi.
Which, wait, did Conan ask you about that? No.
No, it's just a thing. And, I mean, I think that, like, Steve Buscemi is one of my favorite faces of all time. I love his face. But anyways, what is it? Like, hey, kids or something. This might be really boring for the listeners.
No. We'll clip this out where you're looking for it, and then it'll just be right there.
How do you do, fellow kid? Like, that's what I felt like. Like, it was like that type of clothes. There was like even like, you know, cap backwards and like baggy things. And I'm like, you know, I've never felt old before. And that's what I mean about being 27. It's like for the first time, you're sort of not the youngest anymore, right? Like,
no.
It's a shift where you're like, oh, like, I thought I was, I'm a kid. You know, I'm always the youngest.
But you literally just stepped out of the building like a minute ago. And you're like, oh, the door already closed. What the fuck?
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I was just in there. Like, sorry. Yeah.
And, you know, the entire cast, I was like a senior by like 5 years, you know. And I'm like, I feel old for the first time ever in this setting. I feel old.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where, like, I think late 20s is one of those things where there is a shift of going from, like, young man to, like, old, like, there's to, like, adult. Like, it's a weird thing, right? And there's two ways to look at that. You can go, like, look at aging as this sort of, you know, yeah, mortality thing, and shit starts to happen, and your body starts decaying, you know? And I feel that as well. Like, I don't want to die, you know, it feels terrible, but I think there's also a way of sort of, looking at, like, okay, this is my time right now. Like, now I am 27, now I'm 35, now I'm 40, and like, doors are closing and others are opening, and like, your life is sort of moving, you know, moving in one direction or another, but it's changing, and the change is what's great, I think. You know what I mean? Yeah,
and you can't, you know, it's so easy to keep looking back, but if you're looking back, then you could miss the door that's going to open to something even better.
Yeah.
But I think even now, they're really starting to understand more about the human brain, that around 25, and I'm sure I'll be corrected on this if this is fake science, but around 25... You know, before that, your brain, your identity still hasn't really. I mean, I don't think I remember actually having a complete self awareness until I was in my late 20s, mm-hmm. maybe almost even early 30s. Because, you know, it's when you're younger, it's always like, oh, then I'm gonna be 16 and I'm gonna drive, and then I'm gonna be 18, and then I'm 21, and then 25. I'm a quarter of a century, and then after that, and then it's like 30, then 40. That, you know, it's like you're in that sort of weird, you know, space, but you're really like, it's a magical time for you.
Yeah.
Your body's going to be going through a lot of changes, Bill.
But not as much. That's the difference,
not
right?
Not like, as much, yeah.
Up to 20, there's like, but 25, yeah, it's like, I think the frontal cortex or whatever is still, you know, developing up until 25, and you feel it. Like, you feel it, like, I feel like I have gone through so many changes, not physically, but like mentally, over the past 3-4 years. Like, I am different today than I was when I was 22, right? Yeah. 22 to 27, those 5 years you are still developing, and it is, you are changing, and you get new perspectives on things, and you also find new interests. Like, you start reading things that you hadn't read before and all that stuff. And then you're 27, and you know, 26 and 27 is not that big of a difference, right? And 27 to 30, not that, the difference become less and less. Like, the body changes less and less in terms of, like, you sort of, I think your late 20s is sort of when you figured out sort of the things that you might like, the clothes that you wear, the things that you're into, and that's probably going to stay very, quite similar, or, you know.
Absolutely.
If 30 to 40, it's like, it's not huge changes. And that's, I think, also what is terrifying about it is, like, from 15 to 20, it's a lifetime of changes,
yes.
Right? And 20 to 25, also a lifetime of changes. And then,
and then you're like, I'm done, I'm good.
And then you're like, yeah.
Well, there is a, you know, if physical puberty happens around 12, 13, 14, I really do feel like there's an emotional puberty that happens around 27, 28.
Yeah.
Where,
which is why people have crisis, I think, during your late 20s as well, right?
Of course. You know, because 30 always sounds, you know, it, to my parents' generation, 30 was like, well, you're almost dead.
Right.
You know, like, yeah. You just
two kids, yeah, and a Volvo.
Just get a walker and take your teeth out and put them by the bed. But, you know, we have an extended adolescence. You know, your generation and my generation sort of has this extended, spoiled extended adolescence. But I think right before you hit 30, you also might find that a lot, because when you're young, you'll just sort of be friends with everyone. You're just sort of casually friends with everyone. But then in your late 20s, you start kind of forming your real identity. And then you'll start to like shed friends because you just realize I actually don't really have anything in common with those people. Right. And I think you start choosing your path more.
Right.
Where you go, I'm only going to hang out with these people because I have these interests, as opposed to like, fuck it, let's all just fucking hang out. You
right.
Know, oh, that guy's smoking some weird thing out of a shoe, but fuck it, you know. And then at a certain point, you're like, yeah, those people, they stay up too late. you really do start to kind of find your own little.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think, just going back to what we know about sort of the brain's development, I mean, if we know for certain that, you know, your sort of cognitive reasoning is very much still in development up to 25, that poses sort of a question to how we should treat an 18-year-old, right? I mean, you have the right to vote and not drink in this country,
right?
But you can die for your country,
right?
But like cognitively, you're not you yet, right. Or you're not fully developed. Like and partially what's still in development is like reasoning,
right?
And like judgment control and all these different things that like, I mean, I remember. When I started going out in Stockholm, you know, I was 19, 20. It's 18. The drinking age is 18 in Sweden. And we would go out with, like, all my friends. And we were a big group of guys, like, that would, like, sort of have pre-drinks at, like, my place. And
sure.
We would all, like, play music and get drunk. And, like, every night was just, like, this amazing, crazy adventure of, like, first of all, like trying to get into the place was like a thing, and then once you got in, you were like, I'm the king of the world, you know, and you would drink, and it was like, you know, one of those things where like you can't have those sort of party nights again, you know what I mean? Like there's a certain, when you're younger and everything is new for the first time and like whatever, hitting on a girl is like the most exciting feeling ever. There's a lot of firsts happening. But I was also like, we would get drunk and get like weirdly aggressive, you know, and it's a weird Swedish thing. Like you wouldn't know, you wouldn't think that, but we Swedes get really aggressive when they drink. And I don't know if it's like, we're so sort of polite and sort of introverted in a sense. And then like that we just get drunk and everything is just like everything that we're just holding in.
Sure.
But I remember anyways that we would go out and, you know, someone would, you know, bump into you and it was like, you know, and this all these sort of testosterone fucking Neanderthal brain would just like take control.
It's your inner Viking.
Yeah. But it's, you know, and, you know, the complete lack of judgment control, right? Like you would get into fights or you would, you know, break stuff and like, and it was just, and obviously drinking sort of alcohol has that effect on you as well. It sort of enhances this thing that. But you were also in a weird place in time, and then this was 2 years ago, and you know I was 25, and sort of I was out, and you know I've been partying, and you know I'm on my way to like McDonald's to have like get a burger. I'm by myself. I'm like, I'm gonna get a burger. It's 3 a.m. I guess I'll get myself a burger. I'm gonna go fall asleep, and I'm like standing in line, and they're, you know, by the way, this is McDonald's at. In Sweden at 3 a.m. is one of the worst places you could ever be.
Why is that?
Because it's just a cluster of... like, we don't have diners, 24 diners.
Oh, gotcha.
So everybody goes to McDonald's to
have... it's all just drunk people.
It's all drunk people, yeah. and there's a lot of people who maybe have not had the greatest of nights. And
sure.
It's 3 in the morning, so everybody's like, I'm, you know... there's a lot of sort of angry, drunk people who have, you know, not, you know, sort of... got snubbed or whatever it's been, what a terrible night they've had. But I'm standing and I'm by myself, and there's like, you know, a bunch of kids cutting line or something. And I'm like, come on, man. Like, I just say something like that. And these kids are probably, like, between 18 and 20. And the guy turns around and says, like, what the fuck did you say to me?
Oh, no.
And I'm like, I mean, I'm standing in line here, guys. And he's like, really? Huh? What you wanna go? Where all these kind of things? And I'm like, no, I want a Big Mac. Right? and he was like, do this thing. It's like, you'll see when you go outside, you'll see. You won't be talking. Blah blah blah. Blah. And there are 10 of them. There are 10 of them, or 15 of them. They're just in an army of puberty, testosterone driven, underdeveloped brains. And they're all
full
there.
Of alcohol.
Yeah, full of alcohol. And I just go, like, and I think to myself, I'm like, I've been you. You know, maybe not you,
right,
but
right.
I've been like 20, and like you go out and the beginning of the night starts out with you having so much anticipation for the night and energy and like excitement, and then your night goes to shit or whatever, and you're just really angry and you want to fight or whatever it is. And I'm thinking, I'm 25, and like that was, you know, going again about like being late 20s when you start, like, I've aged. Like I felt
you
like
could already feel,
yeah,
the difference.
I felt like I'm, you know, only a couple of years ago I might have been, you know.
So you didn't fight the guy?
No, I was just like, oh, okay.
And you could have just grabbed him and hugged him and go, I know what you're going
to do. Yeah,
right,
yeah, exactly. That's what I should have done.
Let
it's
it
okay.
out.
It's okay. You'll hopefully you'll grow out of this as well. And, you know, and then, you know, I was like, and I started, you know, and I was also drunk, but a fully developed brain being drunk.
Right,
so I was like,
right,
okay,
right.
So what are my options here, Bill?
Yeah.
You know, if there are 10 of them, you know, you're by yourself, you're going to have to go out to the McDonald's and get into a cab.
Right.
Are they going to jump you? Are you going to, you know, throw a punch and run? What's the best strategic? And I'm like, just my frontal cortex is just trying to be as, you know.
You're doing all the calculations.
Calculations of how you get out of this situation, you know, in the smartest way. But I sort of remain calm, and I order my Big Mac, and then I walk out, and I sort of see them, sort of the guys there, and they forgot about it. You know, they're probably fighting someone else,
yeah, of
that
course. Time. Or each other,
or right?
Punching the building.
So,
who knows?
It was fine, but I remember to see. I saw sort of the shift in me and the clear difference of being that, you know, 20 something, and I don't think at the time I knew about sort of the part of your brain that's not fully developed yet, but it clearly isn't, and I've lived through the shifts,
right?
And that goes to, you know, I think that says something about, you know, and if you look at sort of people being drawn into whatever, it's any form of extremism, like you know, neo-Nazis or sort of religious fundamentalism, like that happens a lot around that age of kids being sort of between 18 and 25, right?
Right.
Or patriots, like this sort of like going to war and like all these, like very sort of, it speaks to a young man's brain.
Right.
That maybe like, oh, there's a lot of different things here that I maybe would have taken into account if I was
fully, a little bit older.
Yeah. And it's an interesting thing if you look at it that way, and like what does it say about how we should treat a judgment of an 18-year-old.
And sort of, right.
Or how you can use that. You can use an 18-year-old's underdeveloped testosterone-driven brain to become an excellent soldier, for instance.
Right.
You know? I mean, that all of those things are qualifications that, you know.
Well, the extremists prey, I mean, extremism, yeah. Like you said, extremism really preys on that, because it's like, they can really get in there. And I think if you can, you know, if some of these ideas really get woven in as someone's brain hardens over it,
right,
then it's very difficult to undo that,
right,
because it's almost like, you know, throwing a penny into wet cement.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It just hardens. You're like, God, I get this fucking thing out of here. Yeah, I think it probably would have been helpful if you had, while you were hugging the guy, just say, I understand your brain isn't fully formed yet. Just to see if that maybe would have taken some of the tension out of the situation.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I should start. Just give me a minute. So, how old are you?
I think...
Well, you got 21. Right. Well, so here's what your brain's doing.
In a couple of years, you're going to look back on this. You're going to regret it. You're going to realize you were being silly. It almost feels like they should just put up cameras at a McDonald's in Sweden at 3 o'clock in the morning and just see... Just shoot a reality show of like,
oh,
what,
I mean,
what happens.
And no, but it's so violent and bad. Like, people really do get hurt. I think probably every every Friday, Saturday night. Like, it's a very, very hostile thing. And, I mean, it's almost like I would recommend tourists to just, like, just try.
Just once.
If you ever,
dump
if you're
anybody.
Interested in.
Dump up in anybody.
Right. Just see what that's like. Because it's a weird thing. And you know, you learn about your own culture when once you've left it, in a sense. You know?
Sure.
So that was just what I grew up with. And you start going to McDonald's at late night, well before your, you know, drinking age as well, because it's the only thing that's open. So when you're at house parties as a teenager and you end up at McDonald's, and so many bad interactions.
Is the menu the same, or are there like Swedish faves?
I think it's the same, but it's better because it's like. I think it's all like Swedish produced stuff.
Got it.
They just have higher demands on what they're like.
Sure.
What the products need to be or whatever.
So there's not anything like, oh, and you can get a basket of fish faces at McDonald's.
No, it's just
okay.
The regular quarter pounder.
Faces? What? Oh, this is great. You just eat the faces. Hearing you say like you've learned so much about your culture when you come away from it, I'm fascinated to know, because I feel like you have a leg firmly planted in each culture, because you've spent a lot of time in the States.
Yeah.
How do you view the United States, and, or how do you, you know, sort of, not that every, 350 million people here, so it's not like everyone's like, yeah, America! That
right.
seems to be the loudest voice a lot of the time, but what is the, how do you define Swedish culture? Like, when you sort of look at it, what is the vibe or feeling that you get, or a couple of words that you, that kind of make you stand, how do you characterize Swedish culture?
I think for someone who's, like, never ever thought about Sweden ever, it's like, I think maybe, like, because I spend a lot of time in Toronto, in Canada.
Oh, gotcha.
There, I think there's similarities to Canadians and Swedes, in a sense. Or at least for an American that's sort of, you know, never left America or whatever. If they
right.
think of, like, Swedes tend to be very polite in the same way that we would think of, you know, Americans think sort of Canadians. Apologetic and polite.
Sure.
It's extremely organized and extremely regulated. And, like, there's rules and people follow rules. And you're not supposed to stand out. You're not supposed to be, you know, overly loud. You should be humble and modest and polite.
I'm just laughing because it's everything that we're not.
I know.
It's like here. It's like stand out.
Right.
Be loud if you have to.
No, but it really is. And and you know, there's this, you know, thing that's sort of well known for. Europeans is that you can always spot an American in any restaurants because you can hear them.
Yes, yes,
you know, if you travel around, it's just like, well, I don't want that, well, won't you? And it's just like, he's American. And you can spot Canadians because they have the same accents, but they're not as loud. It's amazing, right? But I think that's very Swedish. And so partially, like, leaving that and coming to America, I find liberating that here it's like you're allowed to be loud. You know, you're allowed to stand out and be sort of doing your own thing is encouraged here. It's
right.
Like, good for you. Go good for you. Like, that actually means something here. You know, there's a lot of, like, great job, good for you. And in Sweden, if you do something that's to stand out, or you know, it's like, well, just don't do it too much.
Right.
Like, that's the first thing, you know, like, don't stand out too much.
Sort of good for you, but
right.
also
Exactly. Sort of good for you, but who the hell do you think you are?
Take it down a notch.
Right.
Sweden, take it down a
notch. Yeah. No, but it really is. And, you know, I think America is maybe exactly what you're saying. It's on the extreme other end of
sure.
it.
Sure.
And you know, there's a lot of lessons to be taught with the sort of Swedish thing. It's called jantelagen in Swedish. It's like it's a name for this thing that you shouldn't stand out. So, like, if you shouldn't buy, like, if you just take the example of you know, suburban houses.
Yeah.
If you make more money than me, you're my neighbor. Don't buy. In a very expensive car, right? Like,
right.
buy the Volvo, the family car. And it doesn't, and so, like, and, like, you know, have a modestly renovated house. And even if you're making, like, big money, never show that you're making big money, right?
Right.
So you're supposed to sort of, you know, yeah, my neighbor and we sort of have the same car. You know, it's like that's kind of where the bar should be. And I think here it's sort of the opposite. It's like, make sure that you have a, you know, bigger or fancier
fuck
car
you,
than
you ever had.
Or, you know, it's like, oh, you just I just renovated, I just got a pool, and, you know, yeah, it's like this kind of thing. And
yeah,
it's sort of encouraged this sort of consumerism and, like, you know,
oh yeah,
and there's great things coming from, it's sort of this social democratic perspective of, like, everybody should sort of be, you know, equal, and you shouldn't sort of compete, and everybody should take care of each other, and it's better if, like, it's better if everybody's sort of on the same level here, as opposed to, like, bragging about money where other people might not have it. And
yeah,
so that is why we have it. It's ingrained in our culture and sort of in our way of looking at the world. Is
God, it's so nice though.
It is nice, and it really is. And I mean, that's why I think being brought up in Sweden is so it's such a gift for someone. Not only, like, for my future kids, I really want them to go to school in Sweden and kind of get that, you know. It's a very good place to learn your values,
right,
and sort of get a good start,
yeah,
in life of how you judge people and how you look at the world. Yeah, I'm very thankful for that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this sort of this extension of this kind of hyper capitalism in America, and it's not, I'm not against it. It's just, you know, it actually does teach us, like, hey, just good for you. You can do what you want. That's good.
Yeah.
Really focus on what you're passionate about. I mean, that's everything that I've ever encouraged people to do, is focus on what you're passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with, like, this type of hyper-capitalism is that if you're so into your own thing, or so much trying to make your own mark, sometimes I think, when everyone's doing that, they're not connecting with each other. Like, they're not coming together necessarily for any reason, because they're so into their own thing that it, like, a nice balance of the two would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's okay to have a nice car, but not at the expense of,
yeah,
you know, something. It's like, you know, not, it's all me and fuck everyone else,
right,
you know? And unfortunately social media completely encourages,
yeah,
crawling into our own.
It's strange because, I think this is also a thing that maybe Americans don't realize as much as I guess just non-Americans, because, so the American culture has completely taken over the world, right? So, you know, sometimes I get questions from Americans like, what are you guys watching in Sweden? I'm like, what do you think?
Game of Thrones.
You know what I mean? Or the Avengers, or whatever,
right,
it is. Like, it's the same thing.
Right.
It's exactly the same thing. Or, like, I mean, Handmaiden's Tale. Like,
right,
every show that's huge is huge in Sweden.
Right.
So the culture, and I think the shift has been sort of during my lifetime, actually. So, like, I'm born 1990.
Yeah.
And, like, in 1990, there was much more sort of, globalization hadn't gone to this, to
right,
the extent yet.
Still, I mean, just barely pre-internet.
Yeah, just,
yeah,
like a couple years before internet. And, you know, those, only, like, 1990 to 2000 was a massive change, and then 2000 to 2010 even more so. It's just constantly changing quicker and quicker. But so Swedish people, not only do like 12-year-old Swedish kids speak fluent English at this point. I mean, it's truly a bilingual country.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, an 80-year-old might not speak good English at all.
Right.
A 12-year-old certainly does. And a 12-year-old plays World of Warcraft and chats and,
mm-hmm,
like, you know, Call of Duty, and they speak English to their things, and they're, you know, they're, or they, whatever kids do, they do make YouTube videos of themselves.
Yeah, these
playing
kids,
the game,
whatever they're doing.
But it's true, because,
yeah,
like, I don't know, it's happening so quickly that even 5 years, like, I don't, it's, like, every 5 years is a brand new generation, I find, you know, like,
yeah,
because, like, I went to high school without iPhones, and then iPhones came, and then Instagram came. I mean, it's just, like, this whole thing, but anyways, my point is that Sweden has, the past 10-15 years, rapidly sort of gone towards a more American model in not only politics, but sort of in sensibility and things of, or just how we view the world politically, And how it's changing, because America has such an overpowering influence on all of the world.
Yeah.
And it's just becoming like the difference, it's really hard to sort of distinguish what is one place and another,
right,
in terms of the borders. And Americans don't realize it because Sweden is not sort of influencing Americans all that much, but Americans and, like, to me, it feels like almost it's just becoming a mishmash. And, like, in 20 years or 30 years, like, English will be a completely bilingual language, probably in most of Europe.
Maybe this is your mission, is to bring Sweden to America. You need to bring some Swedish ideals to America. Calm some of the shit down here.
Right. That's what Bernie Sanders tried to do.
I want to bring Sweden to America. This is what I would like to do.
But it's interesting. Like, I don't know. Like,
just get the Volvo.
Yeah, just get the Volvo.
Just get the Volvo.
That's a pretty good one.
Just get the Volvo. Just get the Volvo. But I think it's kind of interesting to see where the conversation's gone, because we were talking about what happens in your youth and how your brain forms, and then we started speaking culturally, and it made me realize that in the sort of schoolyard of the world, America is still kind of a young country, almost kind of a teenager, maybe getting into like 20, 21, 22 years old. Yeah. So, you know, maybe America's brain is still forming, our prefrontal cortex is still forming, and so that's why we're like this.
Yeah.
It's like, and maybe in 100 years we'll be like, oh boy, sorry about that shit. We had a good time though. So America's basically the drunk guy that wants to fight you in McDonald's.
Right.
But soon,
that's funny.
Yes. You want to go, bro? Come on, bro.
Bro.
America.
Nuclear weapons.
America, you want to go, bro? That's a motto. Can you explain to me because I don't actually know what the pronunciation is, but the diacritical ring that's over the A, which is its own separate letters, correct? That's in your last name.
Is it called an umlaut?
Umlaut's the two dots. That's just the little circle is, I don't know what the name is.
I think
it's just a diacritic.
That's what it's called. Yeah.
Well, a diacritic is any kind of like when you hold a letter down on the phone
and you get all these versions.
Yeah, you get all these things. Yeah. It's just basically it changes the sonic value of the vowel.
Yeah.
But I don't. Is it? Does it hold out the AA sound? How is it actually pronounced?
So A with two dots over it
is an umlaut. Yeah. Okay.
And then the A with one dot over it, which my last name has, is O.
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 Yeah.
I have a feeling I can't.
Because is easy for Americans. Sure. It's just like it's just like a note. But O is harder, and the hardest one is which is O with two dots over it.
Oh yeah, I can't.
Those are the three vowels that we have that you don't. And so my last name in Swedish would be Skarsgård.
Got it. But here in America, it's Skarsgård.
Skarsgård.
Skarsgård. Hey there, Skarsgård. Yeah. I mean, you're very forgiving about just going, I can't bother to correct everyone every fucking time. It's just impossible.
No, but Skarsgård is fine. I mean, that's how I say it here, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I think it would be annoying if I would just try to, like, no, go odd.
Skarsgård, please. Good. Respect my... Yeah.
Mr. Skarsgård.
Mr. Skarsgård.
And it sounds funny. It's like a pirate thing. Skarsgård.
You have the perfect name for Talk Like a Pirate Day. Talk Like a Pirate Day, it's
Skarsgård
the pirate.
Yeah, exactly.
He's 27 now. He doesn't like to fight like he used to because he's really become reflective. Yeah, maybe we don't chase the treasure. We let the treasure come to us. That's how we do it. Yeah, I don't know. It's exciting to hear. So, I mean, I guess I'm considerably older than you are, but it's nice to hear someone, you know, speak positively and favorably about the passage of time and the coming of age and the excitement. I mean, hearing young people be excited about something other than their Instagram feed is really refreshing to me.
Right.
I mean, I know that's out there. We just see so much of the world as reflected through the digital age. But it is, because there was a guy last night in my fucking hotel, and I'm not a physical confrontation person, but I wanted to grab this guy's man bun and beat his face against the wall. And it activated something very deep in me that I think just goes back to being bullied by douchebags when I was younger.
You're right.
But he wasn't even a big guy, but we were in line for I was in the lobby of my hotel, and I had to pee so bad I didn't want to go up to my room. So I was like, I'll just go in the... And the guy was in front of me. The back of his head was shaved, but he had a man bun.
Mm.
He was probably about your age. And he was talking to this girl, and I couldn't tell if they were in line. I was like, are you in line for the bathroom? And he's like, hey, bro, you know, I'm just doing something here. And then it was like one of those. And he was giving her these shitty, cheesy, like, yeah, I think we should... He was like... just like I thought they were a couple, but it was clear he was just hitting on her in the bathroom line. And it was fucking working, and it would really hurt my soul. And he was just one of these guys. He was drunk, and it was exactly what you were talking about. Maybe his brain hadn't formed yet, but he was kind of talking out loud to everyone in the line. He was just sort of holding court. He's like, this line's so long, I might just go piss over in the corner. And I just want to be like, would you just fucking shut up? I just wanted to, like, is this man bun like an off? Can I just twist it off? Does this shut you off? Yeah, I just want to power this guy down, but he was just so much of that... That energy, that douchey energy, that it really created rage. And I wish I had had the perspective that you had, like, well, okay, I can see. I just felt pure hatred. Right. And there was definitely a generational gap.
Yeah. Well, there's. I think I would have felt similarly, even being, you know, his generation.
I just wanted this girl to say to him, like, "Fuck!" I just wanted to say, even talking to this guy,
think you are?
You're encouraging this. This is why he's allowed to thrive.
Yeah, but even because it is like the whole sort of, you know, the prefrontal cortex development. I mean, there's also like the president of this country who never went through that phase. It seems. So
his prefrontal cortex is still forming.
Yeah. Or never will. Yeah, it just fell off course at some point.
I shit it out. I didn't need it anymore. Yeah. I just shit it out.
Sad.
Prefrontal cortex flushing down the toilet. Sad.
Yeah.
Sad.
Loser.
Trump standing over a toilet looking at his prefrontal cortex and shouting and flushing it. He said, loser. Yeah. You're fired.
You're fired. Yeah.
Prefrontal cortex, you're fired.
So I don't know, man, but it is, I think I like to think of, like, I like one of my best friends, Landon Liberon, who was on Hemlock Grove.
Oh yeah, I know Hemlock Grove.
And he you know, he's one of those guys who he says a lot about, like, he's a very, like, a romantic guy, and always just goes like, oh, man, Louis, which, you know, sort of we spent so much time up in Toronto together, and he would just go like, oh, man, like, it's just not what it used to be, you know, like, time, like, you know, like, he's like a really old man stuck in this handsome 25-year-old's body, but he's like, collects vinyls and wear like old brown clothes.
Right. Yes, of course.
and he's like, oh, you know, it used to be like in the 60s, like when you bought a record and, you know, that record meant this.
60s.
Why is that funny?
Because having someone reminisce about a time they never lived in is funny to me.
But even like, you know, before, like, you wrote letters to someone you liked. I mean, there's so much time we can look at and be like,
I think it's great that he appreciates those things.
Yeah. And you know, whatever. And it's like, you know, it's just like now we're, and he's just kind of shits on all, over our time we're living in. And it's just sort of this vein and nothing means anything anymore. And you don't really pay attention to anything anymore, right?
Yeah.
It's like you have 15 seconds and that's about it. And then I'll move on to the next thing. And there's sort of an idea that, you know, before, in the past, people sort of cherish moments more and all this.
Oh, sure.
And all of it's valid points. But sort of, and I think that's also part of, I mean, that's a part of every young generation, I think, is just always going like, I mean, people in the, you know, this is always like, well, it used to be better, man. Our time sucks. It's kind of this thing that I think every generation sort of feel.
I'm sure even like in the Industrial Revolution, like, these buildings, I can't, it's just, it's
Concrete's dumb. Why can't we just have thatched roofs?
Farms, man.
Farms, man. Farms. Get into farms. What are these? Man, these things with wheels. What's wrong with a horse? Yeah. Why do we got to improve on that, man?
Yeah. It's like Industrial Revolution hipsters.
Yeah, yeah. but I'm like, of all the shit that's going on in the world today, I think we live... Like everyone who is alive right now live in the most spectacular, interesting time all time.
Sure.
And just pause for a moment and think about that, right? So, you know, human evolution has been going on since the birth of life, right? We've been evolving for, you know, millions and millions and millions of years. And us, Homo sapiens, has been around for what, like 150,000 years?
Just a smidgen.
Just a little smidgen.
Yeah.
But it's 150,000 years of potential lives, right? And history and, yeah. and you know, 10,000 years of agriculture and civilization. And now might be the most interesting time to ever be alive in the history of mankind.
Yes.
I mean, and it's a strong point. Like, even the fact that, like, you know, and maybe it will be the best time ever to be a human. Like, maybe my children will have, you know, curfews and, like, they can only use electricity between this. Like, I don't know where
the purge. It'll be the purge.
Or the purge, right? Yeah. But and it is changing. But even the change, even the imminent sort of disaster is exciting to live through. You know what I mean? Like,
feel alive.
But it is. Like, I don't know. It's just... I'm slashly, like, there's just like this, I'm so terrified and intrigued at the same time about everything that's going on, sure. You know? But just a little thing like this, like flying, right? Like, flying from New York or from LA to Stockholm to go to my, like, the premiere, and I was there for 2 days, and then I flew to Boston, and then I worked in Boston, and it's like, I can be in three continents in 2 days.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even cost that much to fly, right? Like, it's everybody can sort of afford it. If you have a job, you can get a ticket for, like, back and forth to New York, Sweden, $350.
Right.
I mean, it's not even, and I'm thinking about that. I'm like, this, like, 50 years ago, that was not the case. Like, only really rich people got to fly.
Right.
And 100 years ago, airplanes weren't around. I mean, it's, and Spotify. Like, I have every music that's ever been made at the, you know, the tips of my fingers.
And it's still hard to decide what to listen to.
God, it's even harder, right? What or like, just... you know, Netflix or Filmstruck or like, you know, all these different things where, or like, I can get any book and I can read it on my phone at any given time. It's, we really live in, like, if we would, you know, just have a phone call, a line, it's like, hey, there's, you know, Bob from 1901 here.
Hello?
And he just goes, hey, say, what's going on over there? And he just goes, like, you know, and you just explain to him, like, what your deal is. Like, well, no, we don't write letters. You FaceTime with your girlfriend.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What do you mean? Like, no.
You wouldn't even really have the reference points to be able to explain to him what it was.
But could you imagine, like, oh, and he's off to war, or he's away on work for months, and, like, every other week he gets a little letter from his girlfriend or wife or whatever. And you're like, no, I literally see my girlfriend all the every time.
What?
I want to, in a little screen,
yeah,
and we could have sex. Like, it's just how, like, just to, I think if anything, sort of people or my generation or younger generation should just pause for a second and think, like, you might be alive at the most privileged time, and I mean, if you look statistically, without a doubt,
there's no question,
of all time that's ever been.
Yes.
Like, so just pause and think about that for a second. Not only are you around to be a thing, which is, like, miraculous, you're also around to be a thing in the best time of all time.
It is pretty... I mean, but trying to imagine how to explain to that guy in 1901, it's like, the internet is like an infinite Sears catalog. with sex stuff. Like, how would you explain a meme to someone, or how would you explain, or what would they, you know, what would that guy's version of a hipster be like? Records? Ah, all the cool kids are still listening to Wax Cylinders, you know? Like, right. There's no way. I feel like it would be difficult to even have, like I said, the reference points for that person to understand how localized the world has been. And now they're even, you know, now they're even talking about, rockets could take you anywhere in 30 minutes around the globe.
Right.
You just kind of go into the lower atmosphere and then, you know, you kind of parabolically go up and then down and then 30 minutes. And if that happens, then it's, it will become just a true interconnected local species. But it is crazy and also sad how spoiled we get, how fast, you know. I think Louis C.K. had a bit about you know, someone complaining about the internet on the plane. You're like, they didn't have this a couple years ago. I know, what the fuck is your problem?
I love his whole bit about just being in an airplane.
Yeah.
You're flying. You're sitting in a chair 30,000 feet in the air flying. I mean,
we do take it for granted.
But it's also, and I think that it's also one of the, you know, the lesson to be learned as well is, like, you know, because you can look ahead, sort of envision in a future where it's like, well, it just keeps on getting better and better, and like, yeah, like we solve all these big issues, and like cancer is cured or solved, and global warming is, you know, solved, and starvation is gone, and like there is the future, the possible future where that this time is not the best time ever, right? That it's like, oh well, you know, if we can get a phone to someone 100 years from now, we would go like, oh man, what, really? You know what I mean? And that is the trajectory that you want, right? Like that. So from 1917 until today, if you would explain life to one of those people, they would probably be extremely envious to everything that you have available to you at any given time. And I think the lesson to be learned is, like, because there's, you know, my worry is that we're borrowing things now. It's just like we're borrowing the environment.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We're just like, this is just like we're in debt.
Oh yeah.
Environment, like flying, being in three different continents in 2 days, it's just you're borrowing time and suffering for
always.
And you know, there's so many things in, like, you know, sort of how much we consume and like the fact that we are able to sort of in the Western world live the way we do and spend the way we do and all these different things. And the worry is that, like, yeah, we're not going to be paying back that debt, but like that our children will, or our grandchildren will, in a major way. And like, how will they look at us? How will they look at us being the most privileged people to ever live, in the most privileged time of all time, just being like, man, I want more. And then just like immatures, you know, prematured frontal cortex idiots.
I mean, I think in 100 years they'll be like, man, they had water.
Right?
Those fuckers had water and they didn't even appreciate it.
Right.
Now, we're just fucking Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah. They were pissing in fine drinking water.
They were pissing in water. That's how much water they had. Fucking idiot. But I mean, like, we constantly, like, one of the things about being younger is you're constantly, I feel like we're always just going, fuck you, older self, because we're constantly writing checks and we're like, someday I'll pay this off later, or someday the culture will pay this off later. I don't know when, I don't know how. But hopefully it'll work out.
My friend uses that a lot. He's like, that's future me's problem.
Yeah. I don't have to worry about that right now. And future me's going to be like, what a fucking dick young me was.
Yeah. Or no, not even. It's like paying your rent or whatever it is. It's like, what a dick, you know, 2 days ago me was to me. You know, it's like...
like an hour ago.
Right, yeah. What was he thinking? Or, like, drunk me. How many times haven't we thought, like, go fuck yourself, drunk me.
Yeah, seriously.
I'm here now with the hangover and all the...
Or it's like the difference between daytime Swedes and nighttime Swedes. Like, very polite daytime, nighttime.
Oh boy.
Oh, I have to tell. There's two more things I wanted to ask you about. Number one, the Castle Rock, which I'm very excited about. But I meant to tell you when I saw you at Conan. And great job on Conan, by the way.
Oh, thanks, man. I was so flattered that you mentioned me, and like the whole thing was so surreal.
Oh, come on! It was
like, he mentioned me. He knows I exist.
Of course, I did. We had just seen the. We had just been to the premiere.
Yeah.
And my wife. Oh God, this was. I'm going to preface this story by telling you everything worked out fine. The thing that happened, it's all fine. But I had something happened at the premiere. That as much as I was loving the movie, I was so crushed with guilt. So you know how they had all those people in their raincoats holding the balloons?
Yeah.
And so their backs were to the red carpet, so you would walk around the people and then you would do the red carpet. And then my wife and I were, you know, they were like, let's take singles, let's take pictures of singles. This red carpet's the most surreal experience ever, and
yeah.
I will never get used to it. But they're taking single pictures of my wife and single pictures of me. And so one of the people in the yellow raincoat just lays down in between us.
Yeah.
And so I think we go to a lot of horror things. We go to a lot of horror mazes, theme parks and stuff. So I just think, oh, this is a crazy thing that they're doing. Like
yeah.
all these people are going to lay down, still holding the balloon in his hand, just staring upward, just sort of, you know, dead eyed. And so I think, oh, he's playing around. So I start standing over, and I'm like, hey, you know, I have my balloon. I brought a red balloon.
Right.
Like, making faces. We're taking pictures. And my wife goes, you think he's okay? And I completely shut her down. I go, he's fine. It's part of the thing. I don't want her to ruin his
the
thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, don't ruin the bit. Yeah, he's doing, you know. And then after a minute, it's like, oh, he's not moving. And so security comes over. This kid had complete heat exhaustion. And they had to, like, take him away.
Oh, my... How old is this kid?
Probably 20. I don't know. 18, 19,
20. Because they were small, right?
Well, they were smaller, but he wasn't, like, a child.
Right, yeah.
He was late teens, early 20s, from what I could tell. And the entire movie, just could not stop thinking, like, this poor person was in trouble. I was, because I was being a fucking asshole, because there were cameras there, I thought it was a bit. My wife tried to help him, but I was like, he's fine.
Right.
And then they came over and they helped. And ultimately, they got him, you know, like, they rehydrated. He was okay. I guess I kept checking all night on him.
Right.
And they said he hadn't eaten all day. He was in these really hot clothes.
Right.
And he hadn't had any water. Yeah. So he ended up being fine, but it was such a surreal thing that happened that I didn't know, that I just, the whole time I was like, oh, this guy's gonna die, and I didn't know, and it was my fault.
And you were like, hey, take a selfie!
Hey, look at this guy! I got a balloon, too! Yeah.
Oh.
And it made me realize that my default setting of like, hey, we're all fucking clowning around here,
right.
Maybe not always the best default setting in situations.
Yeah. Oh,
but it was not. It was not part of the premiere at all. But the movie was so beyond, you know. And it's a very hard balance because you have the book, and then you have the miniseries, and then this new thing, and reboots don't always go great. But this. You know, what I said to people after I saw it was, it's so amazing, it's so much its own thing, you can absolutely still have the other experiences, and then this is just a really separate, beautiful experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it was one of those, it was a weird thing, because when we were shooting the movie, you know, you have to understand that this is such a terrifying undertaking for me, like getting the job, just like,
yeah.
Oh wow, no, oh my god, because like I knew that there was it was very highly anticipated, like the miniseries, like, traumatized Sweden, like like so many, like, my girlfriend's a little bit older than me, and all of, like, they're like, that movie, just like, that was the movie that everybody talked about, so. It spread all the way to Sweden in
yeah.
a major way, and it was such a big thing, and the anticipation for the remake was huge. When we were doing it, and so I was doing, there was points, you know, the first step was just like, okay, focus to get the job, right? It was a whole process of
right.
booking it. And then once I booked it, I'm like, I got the job. Whoa, no! Like, what do I do now? Like, it's sort of in the same, like, yeah!
then it just sets in the gravity of responsibility.
Like, oh, you're gonna be butchered. You're gonna destroy, like, all these people. You know, and you fooled Andy and trusting you, and you're just gonna let everybody down, and you know, all these different sort of creeping little fears that, sure. that strangle you at night. And I, but when we were doing it, and you know, there was. I had my way of sort of dealing with that and sort of putting that all of that. I had to put all of that aside and just being like, Bill, make the clown that you would want to see, you know? And that, like, and that was.
God, that needs to be your Twitter bio.
Right. But that, but that was really what I felt. I'm like, there's going to be people who hate you and hate your performance. But there might be people that love your performance and sure. do it for them and do it for them alone and don't care about what. Other people might think of yeah. you and do like, what if I was sitting in the theater, what would I respond to? Like that make, you know, for the people in the audience who are like me, you know, and make it for them sort of a thing, yeah. you know? And I think that's ultimately the lesson of any art that you do. It's like, do it so that you'd like it or right. do it so that you'd be proud of it.
Yeah.
And then if someone goes like, oh, that's shit. You can go, well, we're in different opinions then.
No, my opinions are facts.
Right.
So my opinions are facts.
So, like, and then it's sort of like, all right, if you make a job where you can go like, yeah, that's sort of what I wanted it to be. And then someone goes, that's shit. And you can go, oh, well, I agree to disagree.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that's, and there's strength in that and confidence in that. But anyways, when we were doing it, there was like, you know, there's, I've been working as an actor for 18 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I did my first thing when I was 9.
Yeah.
And I've been on so many different film sets and so many different TV shows and, you know, or crews, I mean, on different parts of the world. And you there's an energy to it. There's different energies. And you can sort of sense the collective energy of what you're doing. Sometimes it's very much like clocking in, clocking out. You yeah. feel people are like, it's just a job. Because crew members, they work. They don't really care. I right. mean, they work on different
they're
projects.
They're doing a job. They're not,
and
yeah.
if the movie's shit, they still get paid. I mean, it's right. Crew members, the entire crew is like, they, you know, it's a job for them. And then at times, you can feel an energy of like, oh, the crew, like everybody part of this crew here feels... We're making something, and people yeah. are a little bit more excited about this thing than maybe they are on any other project. And I was doing this and shooting it and with the kids and everything, and I did feel this energy. It was like, we're creating a beast here. Like there's something that's sort of fake that's clicking.
Yeah.
But I'd never said it. I couldn't. I'm like, if I say that what we're doing here is something that's really working, it's like I was literally waiting for the crash. Like I was waiting, like things were going really well and the energy and what we were doing and the excitement, and like I said, the crew members were like, wow, like this is so special, like we're doing something special, we're making something special here. And I felt that, but I couldn't accept it because I was afraid that I was going to jinx everything.
Well, yeah, and it's not even so much. I don't even think it's so much about jinxing as it is once you become aware that something is special. It's almost like your brain operates in a different place, and you're not present anymore. And it's like,
yeah,
it's just that's a really interesting skill to learn. Which is to be present when your body is telling you like, oh, look at this, or like, no, I can't go out and look at it from that point of view.
Right.
I just have to be. Oh. I have to be in it.
Absolutely. I mean, and when you're doing it, you are. But it was also post, like after we've done it, after we were wrapped, and
yeah.
after like, all my work was done, and it was still this. I was like, I think, and I saw, first cut of the movie, and I'm like, I think it really works, you know? But at the same time, I'm like, well, I don't know, you know? Like, I was just sort of always waiting for them, for that that really big bad to happen. Or,
right.
You know, it can't work, you know? So it was just a weird thing. And then once it came out and people really liked it so much, it was like, oh, well, oh, good. All right, like,
I can let all that go.
Yeah, it's like, fine. Oh, you know, I'm so happy. And I do think that, like you said, it's such a testament to Andy and Barbara, you know, and everyone who was involved in making this film. you know, from the prosthetics and the costume design and everything, that, like, it's so hard to do this. To make something, to make a remake or a new adaptation of something that is so culturally, you know, people have such a clear thing of what it is. And right. what Pennywise was, not only from the book, but from Tim Curry's performance, and it's such an iconic thing already.
Right.
And to redo it, it, I mean, it's it almost always fails, right? It almost always does.
It really does, because you, there are some things where you just go, yeah, they didn't really need to remake that. It was fine the first time. But I think you can really tell the difference between something that's remade because a marketing person said we should remake this, and something that's remade because someone says, I have a very specific, unique vision for this that I think is special. Like, the coming at it from a creative side, because it really was... It really was its own world. And even, I was talking to Finn Wolfhard about it at the premiere, and he said, yeah, they encouraged us all. Because I said, the thing that fascinated me so much, I said, first of all, ton of F-bombs from 13-year-olds, which is great.
Yeah.
Because, but I said,
that's how they talk.
That's how they talk. Yeah. I go, you guys talked how I talked when right. I was a kid. There was nothing that felt scripted about right. it. And he said, yeah, you know, they made us all hang out together, and we all actually became friends, and we got to play around and riff around a lot. And yeah. so... I was like, yeah, I, you know, I was the kid that was making 30 dick jokes a minute
right.
around my friends. Yeah. And so I really, even just from, even if it was just that,
right.
I would have felt like, oh, this movie is incredibly, yeah. So there was an authenticity to it.
Yeah.
And honestly, the best movie villains don't jump out always and go, rawr, I'm all scary.
Right.
It's the ones where you can feel that there's an emptiness in them that you can't reason with or touch.
Right.
That it's just like, you can't. You cannot control this thing.
Yeah.
This thing is going to keep coming for you no matter what, because it doesn't, it won't reason with
right.
you in
yeah.
any way.
Yeah.
But it, but from top to bottom, you guys did such an incredible job. And now I'm excited to, you know, at the premiere when people, because Seth Green was sitting next to us and he was like, man, he goes, yo, where do you think this is going to go? Like, what do you think? Yeah. Like, people are already talking about the next movie.
Right.
Which is, you know, that's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a huge challenge. And I mean, just because I want to, you know, even give more credit also to Andy in how he treated and worked with the kids. And I think it's a lesson for, you know, sort of how I was brought up. And I think it's a lesson for anyone who has kids. It's, he always treated them with respect and treated them like any other actor.
Sure.
So he, at whatever they had to say, he listened and he made sure to listen to them. You know, what's your idea? You know, and he encouraged them to express themselves, express what they thought about the scene, and give them. He really enforced like their sort of confidence in performing, and. In return, these kids were not kids surrounded by adults. They were actors.
Right.
Surrounded by their peers, in
right.
a sense. And the kids, you know, they were so free. There was no, you know, hierarchy of, like, they couldn't do or say anything. They were, you know, Jack Grazer was doing Bill Cosby impersonations.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, off, like, between takes.
Oh, that's amazing.
He's such, like, a little comedic genius, I think.
Yeah.
But there was, like, they were allowed to be who they are fully.
Right.
You know, there was no, like, oh, you can't say that or you can't do this. They were being kids. And within that, they could, their true potential can really shine through.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I don't think it was for them, you know, and, you know, they're all going to have, I think, really great careers ahead of them. And they're going to see that there's going to be a lot of different productions where it's not like that. Where it's like, oh, hey, you know, where people tell you how to do, to say what to do, and, you know, sort of undermine you just for being a kid. And,
right.
And I felt that, you know, I was a kid actor, you know, and it always infuriated me as a kid. It's like, why aren't you not listening to me? Or, like, this sort of way of treating kids as kids. It's like, no, treat them as little humans, you know, and minds of their own.
If they're working,
yeah,
they're professionals,
yeah,
and you should treat them like professionals.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
if you're hanging out at the park with your kids and your other kids, oh, hey, you know, like, maybe,
yeah,
maybe that's, but if they're professional
people,
yeah,
then treat them as professional entities.
But I think, I mean, even I think you should treat your kids like that. I mean, if don't, like, I think sort of hierarchy and authority, and which is a cultural thing as well, which is
sure.
much more pronounced in America, is bullshit, you know? Like this authoritative figure in parenting is like, I mean, your parent, you're the parent. Of course, you're going to be an authoritative figure, but let the kid be, like, listen to your child and,
right.
like encourage your child to be who he is and, like, listen to them and ask them questions. And even if they say the most absurd things, like kids do, about whatever they have thought about, it's like, well, good thing that you had the thought, at least.
Good for you.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and I saw Andy doing that and to the kids, and I was like, he's doing something. He's really, you know, sort of letting these kids' raw talent be encouraged in a beautiful way.
Have they already started talking to you? Have they already started talking to you, like, okay, well, you know, we're going to go back and shoot in 2018, and we're already going to get back into...
Yeah, well, I mean, it's all, yeah, sometime next year, working on the script now, and I hope that, like, because Andy and I had such a good collaboration, and I the second one, there's a lot of challenges to the second part, I think, mainly that the kids are not in it, really.
Right.
And
they're
all adults. And the kid, I mean, the strength of the novel is the kids. It's so much what the story is the kids. And even the part of the kids being adults is about them being kids.
Right.
So they try to remember all of the things that happened when they were children. And they're adults and they get brought back together and they need to figure out who they were as kids, or sort of they never got to really let go of their inner children in a sense.
Yeah.
And the book is told, you know, these two storylines back to back. So one chapter adults, one chapter kids. So you're reading it and you don't know how it's going to end for either the children's story or the adult story up until the very end. We've already told the child story in the first movie. So the second movie, you can't just tell the same story, but they're adults, right? You need to really explore different things.
Here we go again,
right?
Yes.
It's like, well, what did we do in the first movie?
Reference it as the first movie. When they bit that kid's arm,
right? Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. We were here.
Oh, wait, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid.
And they're back in the cistern, and they're like, oh yeah, remember?
Well, I'm in the town in New York Comic Con for Walking Dead stuff, and so I was having dinner last night with a couple of the Walking Dead people, and Andy Lincoln had seen it, and he loved it, and he said, and I loved how all the adults were so broken, almost like, and I go, yeah, you know, it was like they were all kind of monsters in their own way, and he was like, yeah, but, you know, it's because they were all dealing with what they had seen 27 years ago, and I was like, and so we just had this whole conversation about, like, what they, so... This movie might have also been a sequel to what those adults' childhood,
right.
What their childhood
yeah, yeah,
was.
Yeah.
But at the premiere, Finn and all the kids were talking about, like, it was so funny to hear them go, like, who would play us? So they were trying to figure out who played them. And I think I won the award for best casting award for Finn's character as an adult, Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd.
Right there.
Paul Rudd.
Can you think
he's amazing.
He's amazing.
I love him.
Sense of humor. Funny. Kind of look. They look kind of similar.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Get a brown contacts or something. I really. It's one of those things. Like, I'm so, when people cast someone as an older one and they have different eye colors, it always said, "What? Why? What were you thinking?"
Technology.
Context is easy. But like, I've worked on things where they've not.
Oh, they didn't bother with that at all.
No. There's like a brown-eyed character and then there's a blue-eyed kid. I'm like, that's not how it works.
Kid had a good read. I don't want to tell you. Kid had a good read.
Like, you know. I mean, it's going to be such a complete different experience for me, like working with like 40-year-old actors. Like, do you know what I mean? As opposed to the kids. And like, oh, yeah, you know, and like, it's going to be a completely different experience. And I'm really looking forward to it. And I think, you know, I want to talk to, you know, collaborate with Andy and sort of figure out sort of few things. And I think there's a lot of potential to make something. I think it has to be different. So, and this is a thing that I, so when you have a really successful movie and you want to make the sequel to it, there's a lot of producers and money people that just go, well, that worked. So let's just do more of that. Let's just do that again.
Yeah.
And they, like, they really want to make the exactly the same movie because they know that that movie worked.
Right.
And I think that that would be the biggest problem and disaster for the new movie. It's like if they're trying to make the first one. And we have the first one, and it's fantastic and great.
And it was special because that was special
because it was that movie. And I think, like, the coolest version is the sequel. That's something else. Like, oh, that's yeah. And you look at them and you're like, I like, you know, obviously it's the same characters and it's just, you know, the clown and everything, but it's like, you know, maybe it's adults. It could be darker. It could be more psychological. There's a lot of different things that could be, you know, played and explored. So you can look at, like, both of these movies and different movies, but separately as good things.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny to hear you say that because it speaks to what we were saying earlier about trying to recapture your youth. That most sequels are probably like Steve Buscemi going, "Hey, what's up, other kids?
Yeah,
remember? Yeah. You know." A really great example of that is, you know, Rob Zombie made House of a Thousand Corpses, but Devil's Rejects was a completely separate genre of a movie. And it's like, I would love to see sequels experiment with, like, genre hoppers.
Right,
like,
right.
That's, even if it fails, it's like, well, you failed on your own terms,
right,
trying to do something. It didn't fail because people were like, yawn, I saw right. this the last time.
Yeah, and I think it also as an audience member, if you go and like, oh, it chapter two, and you go like, wow, I wasn't expecting that. I mean, right. that's an exhilarating feeling when the movie surprises you.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, and there is, you know, I think audiences should be more open to it as well, and sort of, you know, in genre shifts and sequels or, like, kind of exploring different things and not, you know, and try to view sequels as not necessarily need to compare them to the first thing. It's like, oh, it's another movie. It's the same, you know, and that to because ultimately, if the audience is encouraging that, we will see money people sort of be tending to be more willing to
explore. It's just that money people are scared and money people, you know, they if they think creatively, it's riskier for them to think creatively. It's like, we have to look at charts. If we're spending money, we have to. There's a formula, and we got to make the formula. But then most of the time, and maybe the formula works more than I realize. But I feel like most of the time, shit works when some sort of creative vision breaks through.
Yeah.
And then all the money people go, oh, just do that. Go no. Just get someone else to make their own creative vision.
Yeah.
Like, don't have another kid get his arm bitten off. You know, like we already saw that one time.
Yeah.
But the last thing I want to ask.
What if it's another storm drain?
It's another storm drain. This isn't Georgie, this is Giorgio. And Giorgio is older, and he's in like a cool rain
blue,
jacket.
Blue.
It's blue, and he's like fucking, and it's snowing.
Yeah,
it's not raining, it's snowing.
It's beautiful, it's going to look beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, and it's on the other side of the street, right. So he's reaching in on the other, so it's not even the same if you really think about it.
It's right hand instead of left.
Right hand instead of the left hand, you guys. Fucking brilliant. That's why I get paid. But the last thing I want to ask you about is Castle Rock, because it really does. I mean, I've just seen the teaser for it, but it seems to be this mega Stephen King, you know, universe of like Battle of the Stephen King Stars,
this
kind of a thing.
I mean,
it's, like Annie Wilkes name, and all these different names.
So I saw that teaser before they reached out to me about the project whatsoever, and my friend was like, "Hey, Bill. Look, it's going to be like a TV version of Pennywise." And I saw it, and I'm like, huh, yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. But I was like, and I thought it was weird. It was like, you know, because Pennywise is like a title in the little teaser. And I'm like, what are they doing? Like, it's going to be like another version of like a TV version? Like, and then they reached out to me of sort of, just like for an audition or interest, and I'm like, no, I'm not interested in it. Like, I'm Pennywise in the Stephen King movie.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really like. I was sort of, and it's like J.J. Abrams producing and Bad Robot, so they're like super secretive. Like, well, there's no script, you can't read it, and like this whole thing because apparently everything is Star Wars.
Sure, yeah, of course.
And You know, and I was like, you know, and so I was like, thank you, but like, I'm not so sure. Like, I don't want to read for it. And like, I was worried that it was going to be so associated with Pennywise, and if Pennywise is going to be in it, and like, I'm going to play a character, and then Pennywise is in the show, and I'm like, you know, like the whole thing just sounded right. weird to me. And then they sort of like, oh, okay, we'll let him read a script, and you have like 24 hours to read it, and it's a whole like stupid password thing that you need to go into. And I read the script, and I'm like, wow, this is completely unique in its own thing, and it's great. And then I met with Sam Shaw and Dustin Thomason, the showrunners, and just like, I read the script, it's great. What's the show, right? Like, this is the pilot, what is it? And they sort of talked about their vision and what they want to do with it. And then and I was just in the room, just like, I'm in.
Oh, that's
like,
great.
Yeah, and it's so a complete shift. And I told them, I'm like, well, so I've been worried that it was going to be so associated with it. And they were like, yeah, the teaser was, it didn't make much sense to us either.
So are you allowed to say, are you Pennywise in this, or are you not allowed to say what you are?
No, I'm not. It's a complete separate thing. And so, and I want to make sure, I'm like, just so you know, like, I want to make, and they were like, well, we're sort of, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this, but they were like, we're deliberately sort of not, like, because it is such a phenomenon, and right. they want to make their own thing.
Good.
And it's, you know, it's set in Castle Rock, which is, you know, Derry is Pennywise is in Derry, Maine, and Castle Rock is also in Maine, and it's another fictional town of Stephen King's. And so there's characters that do appear that if you yeah. know his world, that there's, but the story itself is original. It's a new story. And, like, I'm not going to go into any of it, but it's really good. I mean, the script, the first pilot was I was so intrigued. And it's one of those things where, because it's Star Wars, they're, they've been very secretive even for us actors. And, I mean, we're on episode 5 now, and I've read episode 6. And, like, I, up until, like, now, sort of, they gave me the full rundown of what actually happens in the end. But before like the first 4 episodes, I didn't really know where it was going because they were so secretive about it, and there was a reason for my character didn't need to know.
Got it.
And then there's a shift, and then he needed to know.
I wonder if it's that, or they're behind closed doors, they're like,
what the hell are we doing? Yeah,
what the fuck is episode 7? Guys, it's very secretive. I don't know what the fuck are doing. They're gonna find out. We don't know what the fuck we're doing.
What do you mean? What did we mean by that?
Guy. I don't fucking know. I love that Stephen King's is basically presenting this idea of Maine between Derry and Castle Rock and Bangor, Maine. It's yeah. like Maine is just a fucked up, weird yeah. hotbed of yeah. murder activity.
Yeah, and then but anyways, it looks like yeah, working on it now, and it's like. Every script I go, I'm like, I can't wait to fucking find out what's happening, because it's so mysterious. It's very true to Stephen King in theme and in essence. It's dark, sort of the sort of weird Stephen King sort of dark absurdity,
yeah,
which is very true to it. And I really think that, you know, it's one of those things you never know how it's going to come out, but I really think that it's going to really carry the Stephen King essence in a new original story, I'm really excited about it. You know, it's a fun thing, and I'm loving the character I'm playing. It's very different to Pennywise, and I'm using completely different things, but he's creepy.
I can't wait. When does that come out?
Sometime next year.
Yeah. Sometime next year.
We're okay. halfway through the shoot. So.
And a friend of mine just said, I, it's rare that I go to the movies anymore because of my work schedule, unless it's a premiere. But and not like I only go to premieres. It's just like I'm conscious to schedule those in. Mm-hmm. And on the weekends, it's rare that I ever go, hey, I've been working all week, but I'm gonna go get in the car and park and go see a movie.
Right.
Even though once I'm there, I love it.
Yeah.
So I really want to see Atomic Blonde, but a friend of mine just saw it and he was like, I just saw it twice.
Yeah.
It was that fucking good.
Yeah. Yeah. Atomic Blonde is fun. I mean, it's if you're into action, it's like it's. As good as it gets. Like, it's just Charlize Theron just radiating as the only way, like, just how Charlize can, you know? It's yeah. just like, and just beating the shit out of dudes. Which is, like, great. I mean, I don't know. It's just, like, to have, like, a hot, badass actress just beating the shit out of guys.
That's fantastic.
We need more of that.
Well, I've taken up enough of your time, but thank you
this
for...
Yeah, pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
This was great. Yeah. Oh, Bill, it was so nice to meet you. And so I was trying, you know, at Conan, I was trying not to, you know, like, fan out too much on you, but we just absolutely... adored you in the movie, and I'm so excited, and just having spent some time with you too, like, now I'm like, before I appreciated you as a performer, and now I'm like, I really like that Bill. He's gonna do great. That guy's gonna do great. So,
well, listen, Chris, if you're coming over to Sweden, I'll have you for dinner.
Literally, like, next week. Hey,
yeah.
We're here.
Yeah, yeah.
You said any time.
Yeah. No, but for sure, we'll show you around, and
I would love that.
Yeah, yeah. Please come over.
All right. Thank you so much. Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.